Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Elizabeth Connellan-Smith, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about workers' compensation 101, and we're going to emphasize the question of what's covered. We know that navigating workers' compensation issues and questions can be difficult. And there's a lot of decisions about what's covered and the timeline for return to work that's outside of an employer's hands. Add to that difficulty the balancing of Americans with Disabilities Act and paid or unpaid statutory leave laws, and most human resource professionals' heads are spinning. Today, it's our hope that we can provide everyone with a solid grasp on the intricate processes involved in workers' compensation claims, as well as a better understanding of the standard that's used to determine whether an injury is a covered injury. Beth, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to join you, Tawny.
You know, one of the things that I always find so confusing about workers' compensation is not just one thing, but it's all of it. It feels like it is this own little world within labor and employment law that unless you're living and breathing it, you're going to get confused. So that's why I wanted to have a really in-depth conversation with you, Beth, because I feel like every time I have a question, you are on my speed dial to call and ask these questions too.
Well, I appreciate that, Tawny. And you're right. It is in part its own little world. But frankly, if there's any takeaway from today's talk, I hope people also understand that it's very intricately enlaced with other laws, and those need to be thought of as well when crafting your responses.
So Beth, for the people in the audience who don't know you, for our listeners who haven't had the joy of meeting you, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about you and your practice?
Absolutely. So I've been practicing in the area of labor and employment law with a real focus on workers' compensation for nearly 29 years, believe it or not. And in fact, I grew up in a house where we talked about workers' comp because my dad was in the industry as well. Currently, I'm the main member of the National Workers' Compensation Defense Network, which is a business group designed to provide top quality workers' compensation defense practices in all 50 states. I'm also serving as the secretary of the board of the National Workers' Compensation Defense Network. We provide a seminar free to our clients at least once a year, and we have a lot of resources that are available to online at the nwcdn.com website for clients as well. And finally, I am about to become the chair of the American Bar Association Trial Tort and Insurance Practice Workers' Compensation and Employers Liability Committee. That's a committee under the American Bar Association that also seeks to advance education and best practices for workers' compensation practitioners.
The title of some of those committees is a mouthful, and the fact that you were able to just rattle it off that quickly, I think, is an impressive in and of itself.
Well, thank you. You're right.
You know, Beth, one of the things that I think it's important for our listeners to understand, and especially since we have listeners from all over the country, is that every state law is a little bit different, that we're not dealing with a federal law right now, like the federal FMLA or the Americans with Disabilities Act, but there's going to be intricacies or changes with how different states deal with workers' compensation across the country. Is that correct?
That's very true. In fact, there is at least one state that doesn't require workers' compensation coverage. That's Texas. It's called an opt-in state. generally across the board, most states require all employers to carry workers' compensation insurance, and there are penalties if you don't carry the insurance. There's also an upside to carrying the insurance, which is that is the exclusive remedy an injured worker has. So the employer is insulated against regular civil tort actions.
So I think that leads into a really great first question, which is what is workers' compensation and why do employers need to have it on their radar?
So if you can stand a little geeky history, believe it or not, as far back as Sumatra, there were fledgling workers' compensation type laws. The idea was to shift the burden for an injured employee from his community to the employer. It really came to light in America with the dawn of the industrial age, but there were some earlier laws in Europe that also provided either wage replacement and medical treatment or those types of things when an injured worker could not work. Because generally speaking, early in the Industrial Revolution, there was only one breadwinner. And if that breadwinner, meaning the dad in the family, were so profoundly injured that they couldn't go to work and earn wages, there were no wages coming in. And that could quickly spiral into an absolutely terrible situation, as you can imagine. So then early in the Industrial Revolution, an injured worker would sue civilly in court, and they would claim, negligence or, that type of unsafe practice led to my injury. And the employer would have available to them such defenses as contributory negligence. In exchange for a quicker, more streamlined process known as the grand bargain, states across the United States began enacting their own accident laws that evolved over time to be workers' compensation acts. The benefits available generally across the country are wage replacement, medical treatment paid for by the employer's insurer, and in some states, if there is a loss of a body part that's permanent, there may be what are known as scheduled benefits. And that's just a set weekly amount of money paid to compensate the injured worker for the loss of that body part.
So if I were to distill it down to almost one statement, you're injured at work, you won't be destitute because you'll have insurance, you'll have workers' comp insurance. Would that seem correct?
Yeah, what it really is if work is what injured you, work is responsible for making you whole. That's the answer, really.
And you're not going to have to hire a lawyer to sue your employer or to sue a third party. Or if it happened at work and your employer has workers' compensation, then workers' compensation is going to take care of it moving forward.
There's a little subtlety to it. If it happened at work and because of work, those are the two principal elements. So if it happened at work and because of work, then obviously the employer should be responsible for paying the wages and getting the medical treatment paid. The cases that do go to court, good into litigations, the ones I see are when generally there's either a question about whether it happened at work or it happened because of work, or, and we'll talk about this more, I know, in a bit, if there was a problem or a condition that the employee had that they're now claiming work has made worse. Those are generally the ones that get to litigation nowadays in almost all jurisdictions.
Well, it sounds like there are a lot more intricacies to it. So I think that during the course of our what's covered conversation, I might have some more questions for you on that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez. And today our guest is Elizabeth Connellan-Smith, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today we're digging into workers' compensation with a focus on work-related injuries that are covered by workers' compensation. Beth just provided us with a history of how workers' compensation came about, how different states throughout the country came to adopt a workers' compensation program. And we tried to distill in one or two sentences kind of what that would look like. But one of the things that I always find to be so intricate and difficult to follow is the process. Beth, can you kind of walk us through a claim, both from the beginning of time when an employer buys insurance all the way to why you might become involved in a case or a process?
Absolutely. So say we have a brand new employer, and of course, they're going to be getting the insurances they need for their business. So they probably will buy liability insurance. They might get premises insurance. But one of the insurances they have to purchase is the workers' compensation insurance. The cost of the insurance is going to be based on the risk that might happen in that workplace. So it's a little more expensive if you have a dangerous workplace, like say you're a roofer or construction maybe, and it probably is going to be less expensive. It's called a premium, the amount of money you pay for the insurance coverage each year. It's probably going to be less expensive if all you do is maybe sit and answer phones. So that's the first part. And certainly you'd want to talk with your insurance broker or your agent to make sure you have the right amount of insurance for the number of employees that you have and the risk that your business has. So then moving along to what happens in a typical claim, it's no employer wants to have an injured worker. They want to take care of their workers. Most of my clients tell me it's almost like a family. You know, you go to work every day, you work with your coworkers, and you become pretty bonded. But awful scenario, somebody gets injured at work. The first thing they want to do is they want to report the injury, which means you need to tell somebody who's in management or a supervisor, oh my, I hurt myself. The next thing that happens should be the person to whom the injury is reported should immediately determine, do we need immediate medical attention? Or can I begin my investigation now with this employee and find out what was it that caused the injury? Because of course, we don't want the next employee to stumble into the same situation and hurt themselves as well. If it's not a medical emergency, then the person to whom the injury was reported should ask a few questions: what, where, when, why, how. Get the employee's recollection of what has happened. At that point, again, assess whether it's time to go get medical treatment.
At that point in time, when they're having the discussion in the moment about an injury that's occurred and they're assessing whether or not medical attention is needed, is there concerns about talking to other people who may have been there at the time of the incident, or should we be focusing in only on the injured worker?
The answer is both, honestly. It depends, again, on the severity of what's going on. If it's not a major injury and the employee seems able to not only tell you what happened, but also tell you who might have been in the area and might have seen what happened, that's great. Get the names at a minimum. Usually, though, the pressing issue is to have the injured worker checked out medically as soon as possible. So sometimes that means the injured worker is able to drive themselves to a medical facility. Sometimes it means maybe the employer would have a person accompany, drive the injured worker to the medical facility. Oftentimes, many of my clients, I should say, have a designated medical facility close by to where they have their operations, known as their preferred provider. In a number of states, the employer can ask the injured worker to go see their doctors at the preferred provider at the outset of a claim for a period of time, after which the employee might be able to choose a different provider if they felt more comfortable maybe going to their own PCP.
Let's use as just an example, let's say someone pulled their back at work. So not just like a cut finger or something that maybe is going to heal very quickly, but maybe something that needs physical therapy or that's longer in nature. After they've gone and gotten checked out, what's going to be the next step, either that the employer is going to take or maybe that the insurance company is going to take?
So while our injured worker with a back strain is off getting medical treatment, we are going to ask all the witnesses what they saw, what they heard, and just try to get an idea of what happened. And if there's a need to alter a safety protocol or a safety practice, that should happen. And it's allowed to happen in workers' comp, unlike, say, a liability claim where you're not supposed to alter the environment. Meanwhile, as soon as we know whether the injured employee is going to be able to come back to work, perhaps with some accommodation, or maybe even able to do their regular job, just perhaps with some breaks, then we're going to have a discussion with that injured worker, and we're going to look at the guidance given by the doctor. The doctors always tell you what you can and can't do, and they always tell you when the next medical appointment will be. So we're going to have a running dialogue with our injured worker each time, checking what the limitations might be and planning for the next medical visit as hopefully that injured worker recovers.
It sounds like communication is a real key aspect of the process up until this point. And we're going to need to take a quick break. But when we return from that break, I'm going to want to have a better understanding as to where that communication is going to go in the long run. So with that, we're going to take a break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Elizabeth Connellan-Smith, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today we're talking about workers' compensation 101 with an emphasis on what's covered. If you were listening before the break, you heard Beth start explaining the process of what's going to happen once you start a business and you get workers' compensation insurance, but then what happens when there is an injury? And before the break, Beth and I were really focusing in on communication and making sure that after that injury occurs, you're staying in touch with the employee and their medical provider about restrictions or return to work date. Beth, what happens if we find ourselves in a situation where the employee is not getting better, where things aren't going as planned?
There are a couple of things we can do. One of the things you can do is you can ask the provider through the employee whether it's anticipated that maybe the restrictions that are in place might be permanent. And all of this is an inexact science because the doctor is just making their best educated guess based on the duration, perhaps, of the ongoing symptoms. If you have a situation where the doctor is saying, yeah, I think these limitations are permanent, it's time to have another talk with your injured worker, because obviously at that point, not only is the Americans with Disabilities Act in play, but we also have to determine whether there's an open, available position that the employee can perform given these permanent restrictions. That's the first inquiry. If that can't happen, there's a harder conversation that may have to be had, which is you're going to have to look for a job at a different employer that will meet your restrictions ongoing. And this is where there's another interesting part about workers' compensation insurance that many people don't know. And that's that many insurance companies have a lot of resources, including sometimes on-staff vocational rehabilitation experts who can jump in and assist that injured worker in determining what jobs might be available that would meet their limitations. That smooths the transition that's inevitably difficult because we have an injured worker who's coming to terms with the fact that they're forever physically altered. That's a grieving process. They're also having to leave their workplace. That's a little bit of a grieving process. But if you can turn, to use a dumb phrase, that frown upside down and turn it into, here's a new opportunity for you to be a new employee. That's a much better way of doing it. And I think that's best done with some of the resources that may be available.
Beth, when would somebody be dealing directly with you? When do you come into the process? Is it if an employer has any questions just regarding how this is going to happen? Or would there be more specific times when you're brought into the discussion?
The honest answer, Tani, is I'm brought in at all different levels. It really depends on the situation because every workers' compensation claim is very fact-based. Sometimes there seems to be perhaps a breakdown in communication, so I'm asked to come in a non-contested claim just to facilitate a better dialogue. We do things known as a team meeting. That's when we maybe have an injured worker who's malingering a bit and just not getting better, and we're not understanding why they're not getting better. So we invite the injured worker, supervisor, HR, perhaps the medical professional, and sometimes even an adjuster from the workers' compensation insurer, just to have a nice talk around a table where we clear the air and we figure out what can each of us do going forward to help this injured worker get to the end point, whether it's a return to their regular job, return to an accommodated job, or maybe, as I said, return to a new type of employment. Sometimes I'm asked in because there's something unusual about the claim or something that causes the claim to be known, what's known as contested. And that's a case that I would probably bring through the litigation process. That's oftentimes when I'm brought in, but I'm brought in on all different levels.
And what would it mean if the claim's contested?
It means that for one reason or another, the employer and the insurer have decided that this claim perhaps should not be covered by workers' compensation insurer. Sometimes it's because there's a known pre-existing condition that really was not exacerbated or could not have been exacerbated by work. Sometimes it's an unwitnessed injury that doesn't make any sense given the work the employee was doing. And then there are a select few statutory defenses to include intentional injury and intoxication.
So earlier you mentioned that, you know, you're brought in based off of a multitude of facts and that every case is really fact specific. And to me, that underlies that question that's always in my mind of what's covered. If you wouldn't mind, I would love to pepper you with a couple of hypothetical scenarios and you help me and your list and the listeners understand, is this something that would be covered by workers' compensation? Wouldn't it? Because I feel as though oftentimes when I'm on the phone with employers, there's a misconception about what is going to be covered and what won't be covered and different standards.
Sure.
So let's do a first hypothetical. So your employee fell off a horse when they were in college and they experienced a back injury. 10 years later, they're at work in a manufacturing environment and the individual pulls their back while they're lifting a 40-pound tub of oil for a machine. Would pulling the back when lifting the 40-pound tub of oil for a machine they're working on be covered by workers' compensation?
The answer is most likely yes. Let me emphasize for our audience that workers' compensation is known as a no-fault insurance coverage, which means you can do something knuckleheaded, like I'm going to guess that that employee probably should have had an assist if they're lifting a 40-pound tub and they maybe were hurrying and decided they didn't want to use the assist. That doesn't matter. That doesn't disqualify the condition from being covered by workers' compensation insurance. You take your employee as you find them as well, which means this person happened to have a probably quiet underlying back condition that was aggravated or lit up is the language they use oftentimes by this lifting incident at work. So what the analysis is we go back to what I told you originally. So number one, no fault. Number two, did it arise out of employment? That's the term of art, meaning was the employee doing something at work when this happened? And did it arise in the course of employment? So they were at the workplace doing something to further the interests of the employer. And all three of those, the most important being the arising out of and in the course of, they're met in this particular scenario. So most likely that would be a covered injury.
Okay, so that the falling off a horse 10 years ago, you know, it may have caused a weakened back, but that in and of itself isn't going to disqualify the individual, on the face of things from being covered.
Correct. As long as the two prongs that are critical, arising out of and in the course of, are met.
Perfect. Let's jump to a second hypothetical. So we have an employee who was intoxicated while at work, and they slipped off a ladder while they were preparing to lay a roof for the roofing company that they work for. So intoxicated at work, slipped off a ladder, they work for a roofing company and they were preparing to lay a roof. Would this injury, them slipping and pulling a muscle, would that be covered by workers' compensation?
So that's a great scenario, Tani, because like I just said in the prior scenario, this person was at work doing work, right? So it would, on the face of things, it meets the arising out of and in the course of prongs that are necessary to be covered by workers' comp. But there's an added fact there that we need to focus on, and that is intoxication at work in most jurisdictions is a defense that the employer can raise to disqualify an injury from workers' compensation coverage. There'll be a number of questions that need to be answered, because in some jurisdictions, an employer is able to do, say, a breathalyzer or a drug test pretty easily. In other jurisdictions, it's a little more difficult to do that type of thing, but there's always asking other witnesses. Anybody who interacted with that employee that day may be able to say, yeah, you know, I could smell alcohol in his breath. His eyes were blurry, his movements were erratic, any of those things that might support intoxication as a defense. So if those elements are there, if we have coworkers who can say this person was intoxicated that day, it may not be covered by workers' compensation. I need to add a little wrinkle, because there's always a little wrinkle. In many jurisdictions, if the employer was aware that the employee was in the habit of showing up at work and trying to work intoxicated, they lose that defense. So it comes back into workers' compensation coverage. Those are super complex cases, particularly in the environment where many states allow recreational and medical marijuana that could cause intoxication. So those are the kind of cases that I absolutely would encourage our employer clients to contact an attorney and just kind of work through it with them, because it's complicated.
No, it definitely is complicated. Kind of all the things that you just issue spotted for me, some of it was definitely outside of what I would be thinking, especially if this wasn't the first time the employee had showed up and there was concerns about intoxication. For our listeners who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Elizabeth Connellan-Smith, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're digging into workers' compensation, and we're focusing in on work-related injuries that are covered by workers' compensation. We have discussed the history of workers' compensation, what the process looks like, and now I'm peppering Beth with questions that I have about whether a situation will be covered. So Beth, if you don't mind, I'd love to jump into a couple more, because I feel like there's any number of different ways in which we can deal with an injury and whether it's covered or not.
Oh, I would love that, Tani. I love doing these kinds of issue spotting exercises.
So we have an employee who works at a landscaping company, and the employee refuses to wear sunscreen, even though they're outside working under the sun, you know, every day, all day. The company recommends that employees wear sunscreen, but doesn't have a policy that absolutely requires it. the employee has recently been diagnosed with skin cancer. Is that a compensable injury?
That's a super complex case, and that's probably going to come to someone like me for litigation, because most likely the employee is going to produce their doctor saying, they work outside, the whole scenario you just said. And the employer may seek an expert who says, we cannot say that simply working outside for however long period of time they've worked for this employer is what caused the skin cancer. So that's going to come down to determining what really is the root cause of the skin cancer, which may be very difficult to determine. I mean, there are so many other exposures I have to imagine this employee had. If they're one who routinely refuses to wear either a big floppy hat or sunscreen, they've probably been doing that all their life. We also don't know, did the person have terrible sunburns as a child, which can be a factor. So we'd have to have some experts help us figure out if that's a work-related claim or not. And very likely, this brings me to a good point. When an employer has a situation such as that, it's very important at the outset of the claim being reported for that employer to communicate immediately with their insurance adjuster and explain why they're not sure this should be covered by workers' compensation. At that point, the adjuster and the employer contact will work together as a team. I'll join that team, and we'll work through to the end to see what the judicial determination is as to whether that's a work-related condition or not.
I'm guessing, I know in my litigation mind, I'm thinking, well, what do they do on the weekends? Do they sit at the beach and under the sun all weekend? Or are they inside with a book and never touching the sun? And I feel like there's all those hosts of other questions that are going to come into play as we move through a case like that.
That's true. And I'll be candid with you, Tani. The most difficult cases are the cancer cases. Most jurisdictions have what's known as a presumption, oftentimes rebuttable presumption, for certain categories of employees, like firefighters, which means the employee starts out with the presumption that the cancer arose due to their work. And the employer has to jump over a higher hurdle to demonstrate that no, it was not the work. It was perhaps a 50-year habit of smoking cigarettes or some other cause.
That was outside of work or something that the employer couldn't control. Would that be right?
That's correct. That's exactly what it is. Because even though it's no fault, you still have to prove that the condition that you're claiming arose out of and in the course of employment.
I still have so many more questions that I want you to issue spot, but it is time for us to take a short break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Elizabeth Connellan-Smith, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about workers' compensation and what's covered. What are we looking at and analyzing when a determination is made as to whether or not an injury is covered by workers' compensation? And Beth has done a really great job of giving us some background about the workers' compensation history and the process that claims go through once an injury occurs. For those of you who are listening before the break, you heard me peppering Beth with questions and scenarios and asking her whether they'd be covered or not. And I want to jump right back into that, Beth, because I have two more scenarios that really are at top of mind for me. And I'd love to get your thoughts as to what's going to be looked at and analyzed to determine whether or not there's coverage.
Absolutely.
So let's say we have a management employee, and the management employee gets a phone call from a subordinate or a direct report the night before who says, oh, my car is not starting. I'm not going to be able to make it in. And the manager says, I really need you in. I'll pick you up from work tomorrow morning and I'll bring you in and I'll bring you home. So no problem. I'll get you there. Don't worry about a ride. So we have a management employee who picks up a coworker, a direct report, and they drive to work together. But unfortunately, on the way to work, they're in a car accident and both of the employees are injured. Compensable or not compensable?
That is going to depend across jurisdictions. Most jurisdictions have what's known as a public ways exception. And that's the exception is that you're driving on a road, you would have been driving on the road anyway, and accidents happen. So that would not necessarily bring whatever injuries arise out of that accident within the purview of having arisen out of and in the course of employment. So that's going to be a super fact specific situation. Let's add a couple more things into it. Let's say not only did the manager pick the subordinate up because they absolutely had to have them at work, but they also needed to have a discussion about work things on the drive into work. That might bring it a little more closely under the coverage of arising out of in the course of, because obviously they're advancing the interests of the employer. If it's simply two coworkers, one giving another a ride, most likely it would not be covered by workers' compensation insurance. And then the question would be, does the manager have automobile liability insurance coverage that would cover whatever claims arise at that point? But again, that's one of those situations where you have to look at all the factors. There have been cases where an employee was driving to a medical appointment for a work-related injury, and there was an accident, and that was found to be covered under the Workers' Compensation Act, because but for the fact that the employee needed to get that medical treatment, they wouldn't have been on the road. There's a whole host of other ones that are traveling employee situations. So that kind of situation, again, much like the intoxication, I would advise that any employer in that situation immediately get legal advice as well as talk with your adjuster right away.
So many factors that we have to consider. And it's interesting because as that scenario was playing out and you say, what if they were talking about work in the car and how that factor potentially could play in. And in my mind, I'm thinking not just workers' compensation, but now do you have a wage and hour aspect? If they're talking Absolutely. About work in the car, is that compensable time?
That points out how complex all of these issues are. You're right, Tawny.
Let's jump to my final scenario, but watch, your answer is going to lead me to have more questions. We have an employee who is skiing with their family. They're on a fun family vacation. But they took a phone call from a client while they were on the ski lift. Otherwise, however, you know, they're not doing any other work throughout the course of the day. This was the first phone call they took. They took the call on the ski lift. But then as they're getting off the ski lift, they fall and break their ankle. Compensable or not?
So most likely not, because, again, we're going to go back to those two critical factors. Did it arise out of and in the course of employment? Now, if they're on the phone and the phone distracts them and causes them to fall, in some jurisdictions, it's actually possible that might fall within the purview of workers' compensation coverage. Most of them, it wouldn't, because obviously that's what's known as a de minimis kind of work time, when in fact, really what they were doing is vacation. And there was no risk within the workplace necessarily that caused the ankle to fracture. But again, each of these are so fact specific, because if we were to add on to that, say, Tawny, that just as they're getting off the lift and they're on the call, the client starts screaming at the poor person and distracts them, and that's what leads to the fall. Well, maybe that's enough of what's known as a causal nexus to pull it into the coverage of workers' compensation. But I would say most likely, it would not be covered.
The facts sound like that they're so important in scenarios like this. The timing of the facts, what they're doing, where they are, who they're talking to, it seems like no fact is insignificant.
That's true. And that brings me to one thought for all of our listeners, which is it is absolutely critical to do a very thorough early investigation and document every fact, particularly for a contested claim. For non-contested claims, really the focus is, as I mentioned earlier, to avoid the unsafe situation happening again, because we want to keep our employees safe. But for the contested claims, it's critical to gather every fact early on, and it's important not to assume things. So make sure that you are perhaps consulting with the injured worker to make sure what their recollection of events is. Then you're consulting with possible witnesses. Perhaps you're taking photographs of the area where the alleged injury occurred, preserving all of that so that when it comes time to sort through who will be responsible, that it's easier to do. Because most situations, if it's not going to be covered by workers' comp, that's why employees have health insurance. So the health insurance will pay for treatment. And that brings me to one last point I'd like to share, which is there's a unique provision under Maine's Workers' Compensation Act, where if it's a contested claim, the health insurer just needs to get what's known as a notice of controversy, and then they must pay for health coverage. That's great, because that means even when we're trying to figure out, did this arise out of work or not, our injured employee can be getting the necessary medical treatment they need.
You know, Beth, in the last 35 minutes, I feel like you've given us a ton of really helpful takeaways that we're able to use. I feel, however, that there's a ton of misconceptions out there about workers' compensation and how it operates. What would be one of the biggest misconception you've heard, and how do you respond to it to help clarify it for people?
There has been a bit of a growing trend to treat workers' compensation insurance as if it were a 24/7 insurance safety net. And that trend kind of rises and falls over the years. That's a misconception. Workers' compensation is in place for injuries that happen at work, while doing work, because of work. Anything else isn't necessarily a work-related injury. So if you suddenly feel sick at work, but it has nothing to do with the work you were doing or the environment or anything that's tied to work, that's not workers' compensation. You just happened to be at work when you felt sick. And that's important for employers to understand. And frankly, it's very important messaging, because there is a second misconception, which is if you contest a claim of a work-related condition, you're basically telling the injured worker, we don't believe you. But that's not true. It's that maybe it just doesn't fit within this insurance coverage. So again, coming back to the earliest point, communication is really important. Top three things: communication, documentation, and having an open mind to hear and investigate and learn the facts.
Thanks, Beth. I think that is really helpful. And I'll be honest, it's something that I'm hearing more and more about related to COVID and employees who are getting a vaccine, whether for their own reasons or because they don't want to wear a mask at work or otherwise to limit obligations at work. And this belief that if there's an injury, that it'll be workers' compensation, covered by workers' compensation, when there's a lot more that goes into that analysis.
Yeah, that brings up another good point, which is there are some jurisdictions that have passed a presumption around COVID, that if a person in a certain industry develops COVID, it's presumed to have arisen from work. But again, it should be a fact-based analysis. And it's important to engage your team, do the investigation, and use the facts to determine, is it covered? Is it not covered by workers' comp?
With that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish that!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today we've spent the show talking to guest Elizabeth Connellan Smith, a labor and employment attorney at Verrill who specializes in workers' compensation. And we have had such an interesting show today, I feel. Maybe that's because I'm the host and I always think it's interesting. But at the same time, I found that I'm going to be able to walk away from this show with so much more information than I previously had, and some scenarios that I think come up pretty often, and how employers can respond to different scenarios in determining whether or not there's potential coverage or questions they need to ask. So thank you so much for that information, Beth.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Tawny.
So my last question, and lawyers are always advised never to say last question, because I'm sure that your answer is going to lead me to have a multitude of other questions. But I think we hear a lot right now in the news about how we classify individuals who provide work for us, whether or not they're independent contractors or their employees. Do we take more of an Uber, DoorDash model where we have a lot of independent contractors, or do we have employees? How does workers' compensation play into that dialogue? And why do we hear workers' compensation tied to the question of classification?
That's a great question, Tawny. So in recent past, most jurisdictions have created legislative responses to the dilemma of whether someone is an employee or an independent contractor. Predictably, most jurisdictions prefer to have the person classified as an employee so that they enjoy all the benefits and protections that an employee would enjoy. So most jurisdictions will have a pretty strict test that you need to go through each step to determine, is this truly an independent contractor? One of the critical pieces of that is, does this person hold themselves out as doing this work for a bunch of different employers? And are they doing something different than the central work of this particular employer in question? So that is a very dangerous question to get wrong on a lot of fronts, as I'm sure you're thinking, both wage and hour, and then all the other coverages, and unemployment insurance, workers' comp insurance. And so that is a question you absolutely should get guidance from counsel if you have any question whatsoever how to classify the person.
So if you're a contractual driver for Uber or another rideshare program or company, and you get in a car accident and you're injured, is workers' compensation going to cover you for those injuries?
So that depends on the jurisdiction you're in. As people may know, California has been fighting that question, as has Massachusetts of late. And again, the inclination is to capture those people as employees so that they can enjoy all those benefits. Additionally, there's another public policy reason, which is if that contractual Uber driver didn't bother to get automobile insurance, if somebody in the back is injured, they're kind of out of luck. You know, they'll have to go onto their own uninsured motorist coverage, probably. So that's just a very challenging question to answer, and it's very fact-based.
Would there be anything that employers or companies should look at in their policy coverage documents that discuss who's covered? So sometimes I'll talk to someone and they'll say, we're bringing in a remote worker in New Jersey, but our business is located in Connecticut. Do they need to notify their workers' compensation coverage provider about that new employee that they're bringing in, or is that something that they need to look specifically at their plan documents?
Once again, it's based on the jurisdiction, but most often the best practice is to alert the workers' compensation insurer, because you may be able to purchase what's called a rider that would cover an employee working in New Jersey with New Jersey coverage. You probably have to pay a bit more for that. But if, God forbid, your remote worker in New Jersey is injured in New Jersey and you do not have coverage, then you may not enjoy the exclusive remedy. That injured worker may be able to file suit in court and sue you for whatever damages they have in New Jersey. Now, there may be concurrent, it's called concurrent jurisdiction. So say it was a New Hampshire employer, the injured worker in New Jersey may also be able to claim workers' compensation benefits in New Jersey. And that gets into a little bit of a rabbit hole of a pretty sophisticated legal analysis. But it's important for our employers to know that, particularly in this new environment when many employees are working remotely.
Beth, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciated you being on the show and sharing all of this insight with us.
You're welcome, Tani. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.